tonight. We thought about this morning our very first thought of imagining all of the qualities that we aspire to. Qualities of infinite love and compassion and wisdom. All those qualities come together in the form of the Buddha, but it's also a sign of what we ourselves can become. All of his teachings lead us to that possibility that we can develop that potential inside ourselves, and through that developing love and compassion, be able to be of benefit to all beings around us. Just resetting our motivation in this time that we share together, that we're planting the seeds in our minds, in our hearts, that will lead us there and help us to develop in that way. I don't know many of you, and I don't think Venerable Parpa introduced herself. Maybe you all know her or not, but rather than have you spend the first 5 minutes of the talk wondering who is that person up there, I'd like for you to meet Venerable Thichen Tharpa, who's a resident of the Abbey, and my name is Barbara, and I have been a supporter of the Abbey for a long time, and I'm also now a resident of the Abbey too. So that's the our outline, which is on your table, tells us where we are. We're on page 4. With a big old heading that says self-centeredness. I think in the book that we're reading, Venerable Thichen said it in a much kinder way, touching the feet. It's not really a euphemism. Touching the feet of our happiness is the theme of today's talk. And the Lama meditation that Venerable Tharpa led is one of the antidotes to working with this peace to our happiness. So that's what we're going to explore in this talk. Is what is it that steals our happiness? So in the last couple of months here, So in the last, since the beginning this series, we've been looking at the disturbing attitudes that rise up in our minds and cause us a lot of trouble. We looked at attachment, we looked at anger, jealousy and pride were all on the list. And so that's really leading us up to looking at what is the very root of our problem. But underneath all of those is what in the book Venerable Thichen characterizes as the self-cherishing thought. But she's actually started to use a different term, the self-centered thought, as being a little bit more accurate in looking at what is it that causes these things to arise in the mind. So beginning with that first little chapter, talking about recognizing the disturbing attitudes is the beginning to, is the first step to begin to work with them. Like, we have to even be able to identify them. Mostly in our lives, we just go along and we know we feel terrible. We know we do something and then everybody else feels terrible. But, you know, what was that feeling? How do we learn to identify what that emotion is? And so there's two things that we need in order to be able to recognize and begin to get familiar with how that stuff works in our mind. And these are two mental factors that Venerable Thichen talks about a lot. She talks about mindfulness and introspective alertness. And this quality of mindfulness, you know, technically in meditation, it's the quality that knows the meditation object and glues your mind to it. That was one of the definitions I pulled out. So in our daily life, what mindfulness does is it helps us remember our aspirations. It helps us to remember ethical discipline. It helps us to remember the 10 negative actions. So mindfulness is the thing that keeps us aware and remembering that we want to pay attention to these things in our mind. And then introspective alertness is that part of the mind that can kind of stand back and watch what you're doing. They say it's like the spy in the mind, and I have this image. It's totally, I don't know, maybe I heard it somewhere, of, you know, like the submarine scope that comes up and goes, you know, it's like watching all the time about what am I doing, what am I doing, how am I doing. And maybe you've had the experience where as you've begun to work with these afflictive emotions, you can feel the anger rise, you can feel your mouth open, introspective alertness goes, you're getting angry. You know, you may not be able to deal with it, but is that quality of the mind that says, oh, look, you're getting angry. That's the introspective alertness. So to cultivate these two, we need to spend some quiet time every day to begin to get familiar with what's going on internally. And that's what Venerable Children talks about in this first chapter that we're looking at, this chapter 8. You know, that once we've set a mind to wanting to be or wanting to do virtuous action, we've set our intention to want to begin to overcome the negative emotions that arise and cause us so much trouble, then once we've set that intention, just wishing it doesn't make it change. But if we begin to do a really simple practice, really, of looking every day, taking some quiet time to do what she calls digestion meditation, think through the day and just look. How did I do today? What happened today? What were the situations that I experienced? Then you can step back with those two mental factors and just notice, well, so here there was possible blow up. I didn't blow up. I took a step back. Good for me. Can really rejoice in that. You can go to the next hour of the day where you really got into an argument. And instead of, playing out the story again, try to control that particular tendency that I have anyway. But to step back and then just use this a little bit of distance to think, okay, what happened in this situation? What was going on that I couldn't see in the moment, but now I can see? And what was the uncomfortable feeling that I experienced there that was making you react in that way? See if you can identify that feeling. Was that jealousy? Was that anger? What got triggered here? And how does that feel? So, as you spend more time going over and over and over your day, each day like this, you begin to get familiar with how these negative emotions feel and how they arise, and you actually start to notice also if one shows up over and over and over again. So that's one to begin to particularly pay attention to. So that's one of the great values of doing a daily practice, actually, is to get familiar with what's going on inside ourselves. And we're so busy in the day, you know, we get first thing in the morning, we've got a zillion billion things to do, that we don't usually have the space to learn that about ourselves. But in order to transform our mind, we need to get to know our mind. And so that's the first thing that is laid out in this chapter. One of the things that I think is also really key to think about as we're doing that, and it's even more important as we get to be talking about the self-centered thought, but that is also learning that I am not my negative emotions. I am not my self-centered thought. I am way more than that. And so to think that we are one fused being with the negative emotions that appear in our minds is not only incorrect, but also can send us down a road of a lot of, self-abnegation is a word I want to use. I'm not sure if anyone knows what that word means. But, you know, self-approach. You can spend a lot of time feeling guilty about these things and wanting to beat yourself up for these things. And I don't know, personally, I practiced Dharma a lot of years trying to work with that particular tendency of mind. I think it's really common. So our point in stepping back and taking a look at what's going on in our mind is not to give us more fuel to talk about what a bad person we are. Our point is actually to learn to be more compassionate with ourselves, too. So the analogy they use, which is really quite beautiful, is that our mind is clear, knowing, and is analogous to an absolutely perfectly clear blue sky. and the disturbing emotions that arise are like clouds that obscure that sky. You know, and sometimes they're just, you know, sometimes you get this whole thunderhead thing that's hanging around for a while, but it is still just the clouds obscuring the sky. And so keeping that analogy in mind is helpful as you do this, begin to look at this daily practice. Venerable Tarpa said something the other day about learning this, which I thought was very helpful. Learning, for example, that the difference between just noticing, oh, anger arises, it also dissipates, as opposed to anger arises, I'm an angry person, I'm a terrible person, oh, I need to get in therapy, I need to go to, you know, all blah, 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 blah. We know that story. But to come to the place where we can just go, oh, anger arises, I see that. We can also then begin to see that anger arises for every other human being. We're not different. We're not special. We're not any more terrible than anybody. We're not any better than anybody either. So it's a kind way of beginning to get really familiar with the afflictive emotions and how they arise. And it only comes through practice. So that's my plug for the spending time in a daily practice. These Venerable Children, this is a quote from the book. She says, clear nature of our mind is always there, ready to be revealed. This is our potential. And if you take the time to look, it actually appears. We don't focus as much on the clouds as we do on the clear sky. So what is underneath all that? All disturbing attitudes share two things in common. Ignorance and the self-centered thought. Whether it's attachment, whether it is anger, whether it's jealousy, whether it's closed-mindedness, they all arise from ignorance and the self-centered thought. Again, I'm quoting Venerable Trijan, we don't understand who we are or how we in phenomena exist. We don't perceive that at all. This is ignorance. Based on this ignorance, we inappropriately put all our attention on I, me, my, and mine. Mine. Mine would be great, but no. Mine. I, me, my, mind. Mine. And that is the root of all our suffering. So it's an interesting thought, isn't it? The very idea that, focusing on me is the root of all suffering. It kind of turns things around, but it makes a lot of sense. There's a great video that Kevin has been turning us all onto. It's on YouTube. I recommend you go look at it. It's by Satya Nipam. Mm-hmm. It's just called What About Me? And it's this great little soundtrack, and I can't at all do it justice, and I won't try, but his monologue is something like, I wake up in the morning, my first thought is, what about me? I get in the shower, I think, I hope this shower makes me happy. I hope this cup of coffee makes me happy. You know, and it goes on for 5 minutes. Or, actually, he does a turn, so it goes on for about 3 minutes. But that is so true. I wake up in the morning, first thought in my mind, what about me? What will make me happy? And we spend all of our energy, every moment. As I used this the other day, that alarm is too noisy, I'm turning it off, that makes me happy. Oops, I need a cup of coffee, I better get out of bed, that makes me happy. Somebody's in the bathroom, I'm not happy. Knock on the door, get out of the way, I need to be happy. Our happiness, you know, ours is first. My misery needs to be relieved before anybody else's. And it's just the way were made in that particular, you know, that particular ignorance or misunderstanding of the way things are. Out of that misunderstanding, we have this idea that if nobody's looking out for me, then whose responsibility is it? Mine. So get out of my way. I'm the center of the universe. Move over. So does that make sense to people? Does that sound familiar? Or do we need to explain it further? I mean, they talk about it being habituated since before birth. you know, like babies come into this world and they're crying. Okay, you can justify that they're hungry, but they're hungry like right now. And by the time a kid can express themselves, like the terrible twos, they're called the terrible twos, because now you can say, mine now, me now. So it's not something that we develop as we grow up. You know, we really come in with it. And the Buddha says that we can eliminate them. That's the one of the real core points of this whole path, is to be able to change our understanding, I mean, become wise about the nature of things, and then shift this thought of me first to begin to consider others first. And they say that the consideration of others is the source of happiness. If we really want to be happy, and we spend our whole lives trying to be happy, because we sure do, and mostly it doesn't work, or it works for that long and then it's gone. So if there's another way, it's worth trying, I think. I want to talk through, they talk about how the self-centered thought is the cause of our problem. Because it's so seductive. It really, I mean, this thing about who else is going to look for me is really, you know, so ingrained in us. Who else will? I mean, if you think about take care of me first, well, then who's going to take care of me? That's my second thought. So looking at the disadvantages of what that self-centered thought brings, I think helps flush it out a little bit. So there's a nice tiny little list that I just want to explore. Like one of the things that Venerable says very clearly, every single conflict on the planet between two people, between any groups of people, between corporations, between countries, arises from the self-centered thought. Any idea why you need that coil? Things that are off cuff. Somebody stakes out their position. I stake out my position. I'm right. They think they're right. There's no room to negotiate. Countries do it. People do it. Every single conflict. I mean, just think for a moment. See if you can think of another cause of a conflict that doesn't boil down to this. Anything? No. I don't think so. I mean, I haven't found one yet. So, we stake out a territory. This is mine. Then it makes us act in ways that harms other people. Yes, we know. Like, what else? What else makes us act in ways that harm others? Any thought? Any situation that you would be even reactive and harming somebody else that could come down to your own self-centered thought? I don't know. Yeah, we are. We're harming ourselves along the way, Kevin says. Okay, here's another one. It's a disadvantage. The self-centered thought makes us overly sensitive. Oh, yes. Oh, they're upsetting me. Right? Or they're not talking about you at all, but it sounds like maybe they might be referring to you, and so off you go in a whole tangent about how people are talking about you and never respectful of your feelings. And yes? Yes, Mary?
You don't even respect other people.
Right. You have a story in mind? Your computer?
Yeah.
Your computer in particular,
well,
I can.
Yeah, I can always tell you a thousand computers.
Yeah. So, okay, that is a major disadvantage. You know, if we could walk through life and not feel like people were intentionally hurting our feelings, stepping on us, and harming us, would that make life different? Make my life different. Self-centered thought is the basis of all fear. Yeah, oh no, it makes me think harder. How'd you get immediate peace? Yeah? Fear of loss. I mean, that's where I go to. You know, I'm going to lose this and I'm going to lose that. And I'm going to. What will happen to me? Yeah. Well, and then another disadvantage of the self-centered thought is it breeds dissatisfaction. So, in other words, what I have is never enough. Who I am is never enough. I need to be better. I need this. I need that. If you have that, I really want that. Constantly. But just think how busy you are in your day. Think how busy I am in my day. Self-centered thought is driving. Driving, driving, driving. All of that achieving, all of that aspiring, all of that wishing, all of that worry, all of that. I mean, clearly, it is absolutely the root problem. So, again, remembering that we are not one and the same as that thought. You know, I think there's something quite tricky, get off the script here a little bit, there's something quite tricky about talking about selfishness, because we were, I don't know how you were raised, I was raised with, you know, selfish children are bad children. Share your cookies with your brothers and sisters. And I was the oldest of four, so I can divide everything in four precisely equal pieces without even thinking about it. No, because I don't want to be perceived as selfish. You know, I often had a cheat. I was the oldest, but that was a self-centered thought as well. So I do think there's something really tricky to pay attention to if we're thinking about how the self-centered thought runs us to make sure that we don't go into our Catholic background or whatever that training was for you, or kindergarten background, that says selfishness makes you bad. Because it is, as I said, it is the thing that also is there for every single being. And it's not something that we need to be ashamed of. It's not something that we need to be guilty about, which is totally unproductive. But it is something to begin to pay attention to and look at. If the Buddha says perhaps we can change this, then maybe we can. So the key to turning that around, as happens in the video, Sikham says, so what about you? What about you? Instead of my happiness first, your happiness. And it can be a bit arbitrary to try to turn that thought, but the antidote then is to begin to train our minds in the kind of thinking of the meditation that we had this morning, of thinking of the kindness of others. Now, I know for me personally, the first time I was introduced to that meditation, I was shocked. I never thought of the kindness of others. I only thought of mostly the harm. And as I continued to do that meditation, I was stunned to realize that I think in my whole life, I could only think of one person who intentionally meant to harm me at all. That in fact, the kindness of being so far outweighed my negative experience that it was just stunning. But I never really thought about the kindness. All I could get on was, how they did this, and this person did that, and people do that, and people are like this. There's a big theme. So the thought that others are kind takes mind training. It takes retraining and redirecting the thought. But it's a meditation you can do almost anywhere, anytime. When you catch your mind wanting to get ahead or wanting to be in, like in the post office lines that are so long, and then in a small town, I think in a city where they're efficient, right? Small town, they all know each other. So they're going to visit, and then, you know, so instead of getting irritated about, I need to get in here and out of here because that's all about me, actually to turn, to begin to change the mind, the kindness of the still people. And how, both how kind they are to their neighbors, but how, look, they do this all day long. They're like having this counseling service for free, not to mention the fact that the mail is getting out. I mean, you can completely begin to shift that. Perhaps something that precedes it is to begin to think also that that person who's at the counter taking all the attention of the postal person, who really, I'm sure, only wants to get my package right, they're trying to be happy. They're just trying to be happy. Maybe they're lonely, maybe they're whatever, but what's motivating that person is exactly the same thing that's motivating me. To think, and to look at anybody in this room, actually, think, the first thing that happens to Donna when she wakes up in the morning is, what about me? First thing that happens to Kevin when he wakes up in the morning is the thought, what about me? Not in a way of like, but like, whoa. Just like me, we are exactly the same. And, you know, it's a bit of a surprise to think that the whole world isn't thinking about me, actually. They're not. They're thinking about themselves. But don't we all think they are? They're talking about me. Oh, they did that to me. Oh, on purpose to me. Oh, they hate me. Yeah, that's my favorite. They really hate me for this. They're not thinking about me. They're wanting to get their own shower. So this thought is radical. It really is a radical transformation in the way that we look at other people. And so if the second thought can be, they are trying to be happy, gosh, what can I do to support that? Ooh, maybe I could get out of that some faster. Or, you know, whatever the hang up. Maybe I could do their chores today. There's my boss who I just hate, but they're just trying to be happy. What if I actually like said good morning in a pleasant way? You don't have to do much. It's not like buying chocolate for the whole world, which would also make them happy, but mostly. But it's just turning that thought around. I say just, like it's easy. But the antidotal meditations are designed specifically that, to train our minds to turn the thought around. And so then if you're doing your daily check-in meditation, that's one more thing to check. You know, just during the course of the day, was I totally the center of the universe, like 100%, or did it drop to 99.5? You know, did I have a moment? Because that's the rate at which it will change. No, we also have to be really realistic about that. Because this self-centered thought has been with us since the beginning of time and has been the cause of our suffering, the cause of our continuing to be in this cycle since the beginning of time. One of the causes. So, given that, any little change I can make is progress. Anyone. And if, again, if I set myself my aspiration for making that shift and then thinking about it every day, well, also changes inevitable. It's not like a big mystery. Actually, I love the way Nipa Mintz this video, because he says, first you, then me, that's the formula. That's the formula for happiness. It's so succinct. It's so beautifully said. First you, then. So if you think about it in terms of formula, or if you ever used the reference to cookbook recently, the recipe. This is the recipe. Follow the instructions, you get the cake. Follow the instructions, and so the transformation starts to change in our mind. So this is a really critical chapter in Open Heart, Clear Mind. Are people leaving this? Actually, you can look at that. Yeah, good. Maybe?
No.
Oh, good. Yeah. So we get to the point that there's, of course, this is completely theoretical, but I love this analogy that this kind heart is essential. The kind heart is the essential cause of all that happens. And to be able to exchange that thought in our mind, your happiness instead of mine. Sometimes Venerable Sri Ramakrishna says, look at the numbers. 6 billion people on the planet, one is me. Now, what's the ratio there? Maybe the other 599,999,999 are more important. So we reach the point where they talk about our own body and how if you step on a thorn, you don't even think about it. Reach down your foot, hand, dig it out of your foot. And nobody berates the foot, and the hand doesn't like hold it over the foot, says, look what I did for you, la la la, you stupid jerk, shouldn't be out walking barefoot anyway. That when we can develop this exchanging this thought to its ultimate, then we reach out and help another being as though we're pulling the phone out of our own stuff. The impulse is there. Isn't that a beautiful thought? I love that image of being instinctive about, not about, gosh, I hope I don't go walk around that briar patch. No, that's not the thought. The thought is to just pull it out of somebody else. And so again, the more we think about that meditation of the kindness of others and how utterly interdependent each of us is on really every other being, the more, the teachings say, the more we can respond in that way of helping others. Consequently, the outcome, in a really selfish way, is that we're happier. You know that famous quote from the Thich Nhat Hanh talking about, if the Dalai Lama says, if you're going to be selfish, be wise and selfish, benefit others. And that makes you happy. There's one other little point in here that she brought up that I thought was interesting, and that is this belief that some people hold that because we're, from birth, we're wanting our own way, that humans are just naturally selfish and there's no way to overcome that. That's just the way people are. But, you know, we all know the stories of Mother Teresa, all of Mother Teresa's followers, and how selfless they are, Gandhi. I mean, we have these great examples, and we think, well, I'm just a person, but then think about, like, you know, when the Twin Towers fell, it wasn't just firemen, but fire people, and police that went into building. All kinds of people went in there to help without even thinking about their own safety. Now, what is that? That's not an instinctive human being's all selfish response. And this happens every day. You know, somebody dives in to save a child or, you know, stops on the side of the road to save the rabbit. And you know, people are... There's just so many examples of how they counteract that thought. So it's a place not to get discouraged, I think. And think, oh, okay, they're just like that. I'm just like that. So the conclusion again, kind heart is the essential cause of happiness. Yeah. Reaching out to all equally, we start to exchange our happiness first for the other group. So, questions, comments, thoughts on that whole thing? Like, is this what makes sense? What doesn't make sense?
Yeah, Lori.
In the my situation carefully where I don't take care of myself because I'm such in a destructive way. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So how does this tie into that? How does it?
Can you give a specific example of how that shows up?
In a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think this one is of, and I was taking on my family. So if I did suffer and support in a way that it assists him in being weaker, do you know what I mean by that? I don't know. That's a place
where
I don't have
some time
in balance.
Like
when my
caretaking
comes
in
the point,
I'm
just being
unable.
Yeah.
Done by
myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've some experience in that. in my family. And I think a lot of it has to do basically with the motivation. And I think if you actually do what Barbara was saying in terms of this digesting your day, and you look at the experience that you're having and just watch your experience. For me, I always work it backwards. If I'm suffering, then I'm deluded, essentially. And then I look at the situation and what was going on. And if the motivation is actually to help another person, and that is the motivation, no matter what happens, you'll actually, you, whatever happens on their side, you'll actually, even though you could be, even have grief and things, so actually there's a sense of happiness around it because you actually tried to help. But what happens in these situations that you're talking about, that resonate with me, is that I'm tied in a way that I'm doing it also for myself. It actually has a lot to do with me and what's happening in the relationship. And so I think that, When we do these things about thinking about others and who's going to take care of me in the world if I don't take care of myself, I don't really think it's so extreme that we're not going to like brush our teeth or take care of ourselves, you know, for basic things. But it's just the idea of I think it really comes down to really being quiet and takes. I mean, these things I've learned mostly in retrospect, you know, looking sometimes years later about my own, my own stress in the situation and own difficulty in the situation. And then when you have experiences where you're actually, I mean, it's so much easier with things that are simple. Marriages are complex. No, but simple things is where you can learn things, where I can learn things. If something is really simple, like an example where you've actually done something without any thought of yourself or someone else, and you don't have all these trappings of years of relationship, you can actually see that how happy you feel about it. And so that's why I always work backwards. You know, because there is this feeling, the feeling of rejoicing and feeling joy is a very positive thing. And so even if the outcome isn't even what you want, you still have this feeling of kind of joy and happiness about having endeavored because your motivations were clear. I don't know if that helps.
That helps.
Does that make any sense at all?
Oh, yeah, it makes sense. But so if I'm just being kind to him and I go to his home and say, I'm getting a cup of coffee for you, but then all we need is a cup of coffee for you, then I'm doing something selfish.
Well, then, you know, if you're looking for a turn, those patterns like that, you know, if you're not feeling good about it, I find for myself, I have to discuss these patterns.
Yeah. And the other thing I really have caught about change in relationship with people is also doing things that I think are kind, but my ulterior motive is to change them.
Yeah, right. If I do
this, I mean, it's not conscious.
Right.
But if I do this, then they'll be different. And then they're not. And then I do it again, and they're not. And I do it again, and they're not. And then I start getting really irritated, but I keep doing it. So there's some... if I'm wanting something back from it, that's when it, that's what you're the kind of thing you're talking about. Yeah, they are coming here.
Or if you're doing it because you want to be perceived.
Yeah.
For me, it was always the difficulty of thinking whether it was real or not, thinking why it was being out brought that into the world, believing that. True, but believing that completely in myself and wanting so much for that other individual to feel those same feelings towards me and be so afraid that here I demonstrated it, and when it doesn't come back, that means that they don't feel that way about me. And that's a very frightening place to be in a marriage.
Yeah.
And in any relationship, but especially I think marriage brings that up so much of the time, and it's very, very frightening.
Yeah, well, that's a great description of the process, isn't it? I think.
Buddhist definition of love, though.
Yeah.
Buddhist definition of love is so different from what I've experienced in relationships a percentage of the time. I mean, I really believe there's some of it that's there, and then it's mixed in with a lot of other stuff. But, you know, wanting others to be happy, if you take that as your what love means, it's really different from what you just described.
Because you're still the center. You're the one who wants to be the cause of that person's happiness. Mm-hmm. In fact, you can focus on yourself and you don't have to
find yourself again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you
have a comment? I was in school, took a sociology class before that talked about the principle of reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what was very interesting is that so much directed here, it's a little more complex when you get into marriages, but basically in reciprocity, you really feel good when somebody does something nice for you, usually. And that's very nice. But what's, and you grow closer to that person. But what's really surprising is the flip side works too. When you do things for other people, you become closer to that other person too, and you really go. Now, I think when we get into marriage, though, it gets a lot more complex. And I think there's times when, you know, I've been terribly unfair to my wife, and there's times when she hasn't been maybe as fair as she should be to me. But life, I think it's, if we really look, I mean, if I look at it, it's not fair. I mean, there's people starving me out. And I'm sitting here and I haven't. I mean, it's, you know, when we start looking at bringing in gratitude into the whole thing, I mean, it's like, you know, it's pretty. Pretty small, unless I guess uh-huh. You can get irritated though. If it keeps going on and on and on, on all the time, that you keep doing it, somebody just that's just flowing through me.
Well, that's a good point. And again, I actually think that's another advantage of having that daily digestion meditation is that if, you know, if I don't take time for it, it is so easy to get fixed on the fact that my world is sick. And everything that happens inside this world affects me personally. And, you know, to go home and you know, like, okay, money's tight this month, blah, 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 blah. And then go home and think, okay, how many meals did you eat today? More than three. Do you have gas in your car? Yes. Do you have a roof over your head? Yes. You know, it's all those kinds of, but taking that space is necessary for me personally to get out of that because it's all so
Yeah, another thing I was thinking about when you were talking about this is just we're so much conditioned by our media. Like we're talking about self-centeredness and I, and then you're bringing up the examples of where people actually do things. But we don't hear about those things very much. With the media, we don't hear about the kindness of people nearly as much. I mean, you hear about a heroic effort, you know, but you don't really hear about the small little things like... when we were having our discussion the other day, but just helping somebody across the street, you know, like when those lights that are so fast and the old people, they can't actually get across that fast. Just those small little things like that. Those things are, like, to me, are, like, really precious and they happen a lot, you know. So I think that if something in the media, I feel like, reflects back our negativity and it gets kind of...
I think the other problem is that there is so much from the umbrella of the word love. It isn't love. We have all
we don't separate the word out and use it appropriately. So, especially in English, I love it. All of the stuff underneath,
yeah,
you're
also
adding to that, has nothing to do with loneliness. It's about, you know, your own insecurity and your growth.
Yeah.
What about me?
What about me? But one of the exquisite beauties of the practice is to begin to identify these afflictive emotions and, you know, begin to have them diminish a little bit, then you can actually have more space to see what's going on, even in a complex relationship. So if I'm not always focused on me, or if I'm not so hypersensitive anymore, then I'm not as reactive in the relationship. And so, you know, there's space to actually wish you to be happy without a return. But it takes today to apply the antidotes to bring them down a little bit so there's room to see.
So,
you
might
have
to
Who did the anger chapter in this book?
What you can do is you can go home, like just what she's saying, and you can look at those things, and you don't want to suffer. Was that enjoyable?
No.
No, so that's your motivation right there to work on it. And then you do these practices, and you can change the way you're thinking about it. You can change, but you have to practice it. It's like you can't just do it because you want to do it. It actually, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. You know, it's practice. It is a thing of practice and looking at it. And so for me, when I'm in that situation, all I can really do is try to, if I realize that I'm angry, and which is not always there, first I have to realize I'm angry, and then all I can do is just try to calm myself down and shut my mouth.
Oh, yes. That is like the basic practice. Venerable Regina has taught this great thing about the basic practices. zip your lip and keep your hands to yourself. And there is something about that, you know, when the disturbing emotion is up.
It's really helpful. Yeah, be along.
Yeah, yeah. And our breath is awareness. Okay. Always good stuff. Always good stuff. And sometimes I think the Jews were so after, like after the fact, kind of culture, like, oh, I'm sick and I'm sick. Oh, I just got hurt from the sick now. You know, it's like an after the fact thing. I think that something I read or heard is something about, you know, if you wait till you're angry to fix it, then you won't, it'll never, to do the preventative thing, you know, and I think we were talking about that last time with the anger stuff. Was like, if you have to be doing it all the time, if you're practicing it all the time, but then when anger arises, you're like so on top of it. But the other day I was at work and I was reading a book by Yogananda, I don't know his name, but yeah, he's awesome. And it was just like, I remember he was talking about his meditation and his journey through his master and his whole beautiful story. And then I was in between calls and put it down and tried to help somebody on the phone and they were just angry and but because I was already like thinking about this, you know, beautiful person, I was just like, oh, okay, well, you know, and I was just like there, already there, instead of being like in this other state and getting angry and like, oh, and then trying to just get out of it. It was like, you know, and I could see how important that is to be doing it all the time, because then when something does happen, it doesn't mean that we're not going to get angry. It just means that we're already like, you know, on the ball with it, instead of having to pick it up, oh, breathing, wait, I'm supposed to do
Yeah, great. And that doing it all the time may mean, okay, I got angry, so let me sit down and think about this.
Yeah.
You know, doing it in retrospect. And the more you rehearse it on the cushion or in our chair or wherever we do our quiet thing, the more when it comes up, we can see what's going on.
One of the big lessons of Buddhism was the Buddhist teaching that transformation doesn't usually happen in the moment. And changing your habitual mind pattern doesn't happen in the moment. It happens when you do that process, that digestion.
So let's digest a little. Take a few minutes. Do this first or after? After. Just take a few minutes in silence to return to the focus on the breath and allow any points that sort of spoke to you to just drift through. See what reflection of your own gut sparks.